black thing go from left to right, and I thought, I'm going to die out here. No one's ever going to know.
And I couldn't believe what my eyeballs were showing me. I'll never forget how evil the eyes were. But it was horrible. I mean, I've never seen nothing that evil.
It ran towards me at a rate that I can't even explain. Turned and stared at me. And this look of, I just want to kill you. I want to say it was human, but it wasn't.
He was yelling at me to grab a gun, grab a gun. I was like, for what? He said, just grab a gun. And there's footprints all the way to the door of my house. It had went inside my garage all the way to the door.
911, what are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better... Sir? See ya!
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
You're listening to Sasquatch Chronicles. Check us out online at sasquatchchronicles.com. If you've had an encounter, email me. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. Got a great show planned for you tonight. Going to be inviting Tom Seawood to the show. And he is a Kakwakiwak Native American First Nations up there in Canada. He recently went down to a reservation in Omaha, Nebraska, and investigated a lot of strange activity going on down there. And I also welcome the brothers from that reservation, Barry and Derek, to the show. To share some encounters and share some insights as far as how the Native Americans view these creatures. It's kind of a Native American theme this weekend. On Friday's show, I had Razzie Caveman on, and he shared a lot of encounters with the Navajo Nation. And Duke was on that show. It was a great show. And so tonight, we'll be taking a look at how Native Americans view this creature. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. If you get a chance, check out the website, sasquatchchronicles.com. Become a member and get additional shows. Thank you so much for being here on your Memorial Day weekend. Let's jump into it tonight. I want to welcome Tom Seawood to the show. Tom, welcome to the show. How are you tonight?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on again.
Thanks for coming on again. And for the listeners, if you go out to hamumuadventures.com, check out Tom's website, hamumuadventures.com. And I also want to welcome Derek from Res Squatch and Research. Derek, how are you tonight?
I'm doing all right now.
And also your brother, Barry. Barry, how are you?
Good. I'm good.
Good. Thank you guys both for coming on. Tom, now you went down to Omaha, where Derek and Barry are from, with the Res Squatching Research. And what got you interested in going to that area?
Well, we started filming episodes for Sasquatch Island there about a month ago. And at the same time, Barry and I were communicating back and forth with text and phoning each other. And he was filling me in about all the activity they have down there. And of course, them being North American Indian, and, you know, it'd be perfect to have them on the show. You know, most people are, you know, send contracts to one another, and all of a sudden they go down and do the filming. And, you know, I thought, you know, we should do this Native way. So I mentioned to Barry, I said, how about I jump on a bus and I come down and see you guys and sit at your blanket and we discuss where we want to go insofar as, you know, hopefully getting you on one of the television episodes or your own documentary on what's going on down there. And, you know, that way we get to know one another and, you know, get to show my respect. And if you guys are all okay with it, we can move from there to possibly putting down, on paper, our contract of how we see us going about. And sort of, to me, that was the Native Indian way of doing things. You know, we call it protocols, where we like to get everything taken care of, you know, as far as asking permission from the leaders to be in another tribe's territories, and to do something like this, you know, it's so, you know, new insofar as North American Indians working together in something that concerns Sasquatch, Bigfoot. And Barry said that would be great. And Peggy, my wife, she said, no, you're not. You're not going on a bus. We're flying down there. And so Peggy and I packed up and off we went to Omaha.
I gotcha. And Barry, tell us about what's been going on around this reservation. And we'll get to Derek in a moment because I got to hear the story of him being grabbed by a Sasquatch. But before we get into that, what kind of stuff has been going on and around the reservation?
It's been very interesting, to say the least. People are hearing them in their backyards, deep guttural growls. They've been seeing him on Highway 75 running across. We got one report where he actually hesitated in the middle of the road while this family was coming home and actually took a look at him, then crossed. So just one kid, one of my nephews, saw him on his quad. There was a report. We investigated all those. So within the month, we had four reports, you know, of actual sightings or audio, vocalization, whatever you want to call it. So, I can't explain it. All I can tell you is that we love hearing that and we love investigating them.
Well, and I want to go a little bit more to what's going on around the reservation and what you've seen, Tom, what you've experienced, Barry. But Barry, would your brother, Derek, tell us about the encounter when he was grabbed by one? You guys were together, weren't you?
Yeah, we were. I know I played that audio for Tom, and you know that I have to put that right up there with being one of our top three encounters. That was wild, man. And you know, I think Tom can attest, you cannot duplicate that. You cannot script that. That was just one scary. I don't even have the adjective to describe that experience, but I'll let Derek try and describe it a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
is he there?
To be honest, yeah, he really don't feel comfortable about talking about that, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, do you want to tell us what happened, Barry? Tell for the audience, maybe tell us what you guys were out doing and what happened.
I was at home, and it was probably about 20 to 10. My brother came up and he knocked on the door and he said, hey, one of the relatives came and said, Grandma Florence, had a boulder or a big rock thrown on her roof, and she's really upset about it. She had said that she wanted us out there to at least tell it to leave her alone or tell it to, you know, go away. It really scared her. And when I got word, you know, Derek and I were pretty upset, you know, because all we ever did is try to, you know, pay our respects to him and you know, approach him in a good way. So that bothered us. And we kind of went out. And I'll be honest with you, we went out with a little attitude over this, I would say, at least 15-foot bank. We were looking into this pitch-black gully off this bank. And you could feel it in the air, you know, this eerie feeling. And I knew something was wrong at that point. And I proceeded to tell him in a good way, you know, not to bother my grandma's house. Again, I think I may have pushed it, but I didn't really care. Then all of a sudden, from the black, pitch black area we were looking down to, a rock or a piece of a branch or something hit me in the shoulder, and that's that startled me, and that kind of pissed me off, to be honest with you. And I knew then something was wrong, but I wasn't going to back down. My brother and my son was standing behind me, and my brother was standing to the left of me about 7 or 8 feet. He was about 2 feet from the edge. And you can actually hear, well, I was going to say the audio, but he started to get pulled down, and I just could not believe that. Then you could hear like, you know, like like it wasn't, you know, it was a squatch, and something grabbed his leg. He described it afterwards. I literally had a tug of war with him. I grabbed his arm as he was going down, and we had a tug of war, and finally it let up. And then, you know, it just, yeah, you kind of have to hear the audio to really get a full, you know, to even imagine what was going on. But that was incredible, man. And, you know, we ain't even looking for that kind of attention. We ain't trying to, I mean, Tom was there. I mean, Tom heard it all, and it let him go. I pulled him back up, and, you know, we were ready to defend ourselves. I mean, I was cussing. He was cussing. He was in shock. My son was in shock. It just, that was too much, man.
Yeah. And so it grabbed his leg from, was it in a bush or something? And it reached out and grabbed his leg.
Well, it crawled up from the bank.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah. Like he crawled up the bank side and just, he grabbed my brother around his calf and around behind his knee. And he felt three fingers, and it actually pulled him down. It started to pull him down. I just can't even imagine if I didn't reach out and grab him.
Now, have you guys had these creatures around the reservation for a long time, or is this something recent?
Well, I think we've been told and we've heard stories since we were young, so we've had them around a long time. You know, according to our research, you know, we have identified five different colors or species, and they're obviously habituating, you know, on the north part of our reservation. And it just, you know, you just have to be here to believe it. You know, I'm anxious to hear from Tom.
Yeah. And before I get into Tom, tell us the five species you guys have identified.
Well, we gave them Indian names, and I don't want to get that out right now.
Okay. And then, Tom, what do you think's going on around the reservation?
I think there's definitely a lot of Sasquatch on their reservation. Definitely different clans by the sounds of it. After I got back, I went to a map and I looked at it and satellite imagery, and I was just like, wow, that's what's going on down there. And they're in the southeast corner where Barry lives and where they're doing a lot of their research. And of course, the Missouri River's there. There's across from the Missouri River, it's all the start of the plains. And on the reserve, it's rolling hills with timberlands and farm fields. And of course, a lot of animals down there, like the deer and what do you call it, raccoons. And one of the things that really caught my attention when I stayed there in the cabin with Peggy was the amount of bird activity. Dicky birds right up to large birds flying around, and the turkey hunt had just finished in the state in that area, and some of the hunters had stayed at the cabins and of the tribes, and you could see the turkey feathers from their harvest and that. You know, I've never grown up in an area with turkeys, so it sort of, you know, intrigued me that those were there as well. So there's a lot of food, and apparently a lot of the farms are growing livestock quality corn, and they let it dry right on the husk, and then they harvest it, from what I understand. And then someone mentioned that sometimes there's too much and they have a surplus, and they'll just dump all of this corn cobs in the corner of some field somewhere. So there's definitely a lot of protein to support a large omnivore. And that area with this, where Barry is, there's a couple streams, and the timberlands are right there on the banks of these streams, and they're sort of like corridors connecting the Indian reservation timberlands to the Missouri River. And I can only imagine what they're harvesting in there, because I don't know that region. But, you know, just looking at the internet and seeing what kind of fish are there, there's everything from catfish, paddlefish, walleyes, and a whole bunch of other things I've never even seen myself or even heard about until I was doing my research. But it's a high concentration of protein. And then with the farm fields there, Barry mentioned that they started in 2007 a farm corporation for the tribe, and, you know, opened up more fields and so forth. And I think that's one of the reasons why they have a lot of activity, is because a lot of the timberlands in the last 20 years have been removed. And now there's this 45 mile long strip of timber, and Barry and Derek live in the southern corner. And I think that's where one of the clans are established. And with the amount of stick structures they're telling me about, I really think that the clans of Sasquatch down there have their, like in my territories, their traditional they have their clan territories, and they're, you know, they're really guarding it and interacting with the humans. And that's what Barry and Derek were filming in, and they're going to fill all the viewers in tonight. There's just, it's just amazing the amount of stories and activity and encounters that are taking place down there.
And Barry, I wanted to ask you, in your culture, what is your feeling as far as what Sasquatch is?
Well, you know, I don't have, you know, that great mystical, magical sort of story. What I can tell you is, and to be frank with you, we've always known him to be our brother. I know I've interacted and spoke with a lot of Sioux leaders, and they felt the same way. So I believe, from a personal belief, you know, we believe, and at least I do, and we believe he's a humanoid, and based on our research, you know, his behavior is so human-like. Now, I was watching a show last night. I don't know if it was Jane Goodall's, one of her documentaries, but I overheard, and with the grandkids going crazy, I heard that 98% we have the same attributes, same behaviors, if I understood that right. So I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does, and I appreciate you answering it. Is there a couple encounters that you'd like to share with the audience that have happened, or any interesting encounters that you've either investigated or have been handed down to you that you could share with the audience?
Yeah, I would love to share mine. I had and this is kind of, we had a lot of encounters, but there was one that just stands out to me as the ultimate. I had a 20-minute encounter one time.
Well, if you would, tell us what were you doing, and then just kind of walk the audience into the encounter, if you would.
We were using an approach, and I'll just say it, you know, I've been kind of holding off on this, but I think it's time to tell it. We were asking him, you know, some biblical questions for about 30 days. That was kind of the goal. And he would always come about 50 yards and give us some serious eye glow. And that was pretty neat to us. So, you know, we basically connected and developed a relationship with him. Then we decided again to take it a little further with the biblical questions. Around 2 o'clock, we decided to wrap it up after, you know, he had made some eye contact with us or gave us some eye shine. And then as we left, we decided to go back where we thought he might be. And we drove by there, and lo and behold, my cousin saw him. He was kneeling, or he was crouched down like a coach on the sideline with his arms on his thighs. And his eyes were lit up. We lit him up with flashlights. He stood there. He stayed crouched for about 30 seconds as if to say, you know, well, I'm here. What do you want now? And it was almost as if he was saying, you know, you got me now. I heard what you said. Now, let's pray. Let's do what you said. And he was waiting on us. That's what was so amazing to me. And my niece actually recorded that. And my cousin was there. And he eventually, after about 30 seconds of just crouched over, he stood up. He looked to his left before he stood up. Then he kind of like snapped his head, like as if, his body language said, well, you know, you don't want to talk, then I'm out of here. As he walked away, we backed up in my car to follow him. And mind you, we had him lit up from head to toe, and his eyes were like the moon. They were big. He had canines. He had the deep, deep sunken eyes. You know, yeah, he had the eyebrows, the deep indentions in his forehead, and he stood about 8.5 feet tall. And this guy was an older guy. He was a little skinnier. He wasn't as you know, muscular. He seemed like an old guy. He had gray or white hair. Then he walked away. My niece, and to her credit, she said, "Don't be afraid. You're my dad's helper." And he stopped. He stopped in his tracks. And if you go to our page, you can actually see image. It's a little pixelated, but that's the actual image of him stopping and looking at us. Now, I about, you know, it was scary when he stopped, because he turned and snapped his head to look at us after she made that comment towards him, as if to say, "What did you say?" And he processed us. His eyes were spinning. He had greenish blue around his eyes. And he stared at us for about 20 seconds. Then he snapped his head again, as if to say, "Okay, you know, I'm nobody's helper." And as he walked away from us, he took 4 steps. Then he grunted. Then his baby came out and started to play with us. It actually barked like a dog, and it was all white. It was just, you know, it was an incredible story. Just incredible experience.
Yeah, that is. How long ago did that happen?
That happened in 3 years ago, February 21st at 2:10 a.m. in the morning.
Was that your first time ever really seeing one?
No, not really. My brother and I was always the guy with the camera. I always thought I was going to get this perfect picture, high definition picture. But I caught glimpses of him with my brothers.
Oh, I see. So you've seen this creature before. That wasn't the first time you ran into him.
Yeah, that was just the very up-close encounter.
You know, I just talked to Randy Yazzie. He's down in the Southwest, the Navajo Nation. And I was asking them, because I like to get some of the Native Americans' thoughts on what these things are. And he kind of surprised me a little bit. He said that that in their culture, they look at them almost like deities, which makes me nervous. But, you know, so it was really interesting to hear his take on what these things are. Like, when you leave them food, you're not leaving food for a wild animal. It's actually a tribute. And that's kind of how they see it. And I just thought it was fascinating to hear that, you know. And you mentioned with this thing, you were talking about Bible verses. Why go with Bible verses? What was your thought process with that?
Well, I think, you know, everybody has, and I respect their opinion about it and their tribal belief, but we took it a little further, you know, and I guess we say that because we've heard about everybody's version. And again, with all due respect, we tried to take and took a different approach. We would ask him certain things, and we base it off, again, our approach and the encounters we have. We'll ask to pray with him, and if there's a lot of viewers out there, go ahead and try it. But we offered to pray with him, and then, you know, he'll come close. We actually believe we reconnected with them based on what our ancestors told us, and that took a lot of hard work. You know, it took a lot of trust, and, you know, we don't mean to dramatize this by no means, but we believe we reconnected, and it's through a spiritual approach.
Yeah, and I wasn't asking the question like sarcastically. I was just curious on why you guys decided to do that. And, you know, I mean, who knows at this point? I mean, any approach. There's almost no approach that I'm against at this point, you know, as far as trying to. Let me ask you this. Would you like the mystery to be solved as far as what this creature is?
Well, you know, if you come to our expedition, we would share the whole story with you. That's kind of, you know, how we're taking this. We'd love to share it. I mean, you know, everybody's going to have their belief, you know, but I think Tom can attest that we actually called him out. And I know of a couple people who kind of have the same, not the same approach, but are having some similar interaction with them. And I'll tell you right now, ours is very special. And, you know, I'm not trying to throw Tom in here every time, but Tom actually witnessed it for himself.
What do you think, Tom?
I think that they're just doing the thing that I'm finding all First Nations do. It's, you know, we just look at them, number one, that they're there. We have our own personal tribal beliefs on what they are. So, you know, some spiritual, of course, some, you know, deity, like you were saying, with the Navajo, I guess. And, you know, our people, it's, you know, the highest ranking crest is the Junahua, the Wild Woman of the Woods. And, you know, the male Junahua is used to see our chiefs become witnessed in as the new chief of a family clan in Potlatch. And, of course, carved on all of our welcoming posts you see around the nation and in our communities and memorial poles, you know, down at the base, which is the most powerful position. So we all have our own beliefs in regards to where it is within our culture, our society, and so forth, and, you know, what the creature is. And we respect each other's beliefs for that. But with them, I just seen that they're doing exactly what I was brought up to do, show respect to the creature. And like my dad told me when I asked him, what happens if I run into one of these things? Well, when I started hunting and going off into the bush as a young man, and he said, speak Kwakwala to them. That's our language. And he says, just tell them who you are, what you're up to. You mean them no harm, and they'll leave you alone. That's what the old people taught me, he said. I've done that through the years, you know, and at the same time, when I had a, I guess you could say, a negative encounter like Barry and Derek, you know, it wasn't as close as being grabbed, you know. It was basically, you know, them trying to push me out of my kayak camp. You know, I went in there the next day and showed aggression, and as I stated before, and, you know, peeing in all the corners of my camp, you know, and shooting guns and making my stand. They moved off, but at the same turn, and another occasion, and others I've heard about where you show aggression, they'll show it right back. And that's what I really found intriguing about their encounter down there, the one that was on the audio clip. You know, Derek, you know, and both of them are big, big men, you know. And Derek, being a real big man, you could tell, and he's bushy. You can tell when you meet him, you know, he's crisp and everything out in the bush. He knows what's going on. And in the audio, when you hear him, and you can't act that stuff. You know, you hear Barry being aggressive and, you know, using, you know, profanity, and then, you know, once it does get shared with everyone, you know, we're gonna have to beep a lot of parts out of it, but that's all right. But it adds to the whole, you know, authenticity of it. And then you hear Derek, and he's making sounds like a man that's, you know, he's afraid, he's surprised, and, you know, this is something out of the ordinary for him, the noises he's making. And then all of a sudden you hear Barry really get aggressive with his voice as tug of war is taking place with his brother between Barry and the Sasquatch. And then all of a sudden it's there, you know, it's over, but they're still, you know, you can see the hostility and hear the hostility in their voices. And I think that's, you know, something that's really unique where, yeah, there's going to be times, I guess, when the creatures and the natives have clashed and are clashing now and will continue to clash. But we still have to keep that respect level, you know, like we're not going to go shoot it or anything with a rifle. But, you know, as researchers, you know, we're pushing our boundaries. We're going down paths that our tribe members have not tread in decades, if not generations. And, you know, Red Squatching and myself, you know, it's nice having them there that I can talk to and communicate with, because they're on the same path that I'm on. And gives you a little bit of reassurance knowing that, you know, you're not the only one out there doing these crazy things, trying to interact with these Sasquatch Bigfoot creatures. So it was historic meeting up with them, is the way I look at it, having two native tribes and research groups for Sasquatch from, you know, basically them from the central Turtle Island, Nebraska, their Omaha homelands, and me from Vancouver Island, the Pacific Northwest. You know, that was historic, us meeting like that. You know, that's never been done before that I know of. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the day that, you know, the three groups, including Randy there from the Navajo Nation, maybe, and I think her name is Nancy down in New Mexico. You know, that's what I'm doing with Sasquatch Island. I'm trying to bring in the like-minded Sasquatch, Bigfoot, Indian researchers, and you know, it's the story is, it's, I won't say unique, because it's always been there since the dawn of our creations and the start of our tribes on Turtle Island. But now in this modern world, we're getting it out. We're working together and cooperating, and that's very unique.
Don't you find, and both you guys can answer this question, I've interviewed a lot of Native Americans throughout the show, you know, over the years of doing the show. And what I found with Native Americans, the same as you would see in the Bigfoot world, every group, Native American group, has their own feeling on the creature. Some think it's a mystical being that can do extraordinary things. Sometimes you'll talk to Native Americans and they'll say they're people. And then even the feelings across the board, there's some Native American groups that have no love for the Sasquatch. They, you know, kill them all and let God figure it out type attitude. And then some Native Americans, I would say most Native Americans go this route where you don't shoot one unless it's harming you, that sort of thing. Do you guys see that between the different Native American groups as far as the beliefs? I guess it all depends on what type of encounter you have had with them in order to come up with some sort of theory or belief system. But do you guys find that with a lot of different Native American tribes?
Well, I've definitely. Different beliefs and the way they take a cultural and personal stand towards the creatures.
Yeah, we hear that a lot. And just for our tribe, you know, we were always told as young people, as young kids, to leave them alone. And, you know, with all due respect, you know, that's what we've done. What we're doing out there is we're just trying to build and reconnect with them. And as I stated earlier, that's what we've done. And so, I respect that opinion, but I also wanted to know more and to research them further. And like I said, I maybe I'm hyping my expedition up, but we're going to try to answer some of those questions at our expedition in August.
And you can go ahead and plug the expedition. How can people contact you and the dates and all that other good stuff?
Well, the dates are August 17th, 18th, and 19th, and it's an invite only, but that we still have a few spots open and some outstanding speakers coming. Again, you'll have to call me at 402-922-1592, and there's a reason why we do that, because we don't have a lot of room. We don't like big crowds, as opposed to a conference, so to speak. So this year we're adding 5. We're going to take 15, and you know, we got some slots filled. You know, obviously you'll call me, and we like to talk to you a little bit and kind of like a screening, and then we'll let you know. We've kind of been under the radar, but kind of big time squatching goes on. So we've been very successful. We're very, very proud from where we started to today. It's one of the, you know, it's very sought after. We feel like we put our name out there now, and we're proud of the hard work, and I got a great team.
Yeah, it sounds like it. How would you define success?
Well, I think to answer your question, I think if when you my team already said we're not going to show anything, expose anything till the expedition. We've had footprints now. We got audio. We got FLIR video that I would put up against anybody, that FLIR video. We have a Android video of him. So that to us, that's kind of success. Now we've refocused and we're going down a different path with him.
I wanted to ask you, Barry, have you had any aggressive encounters around the reservation?
Oh my goodness. Thomas can tell you that story. I'm, you know, when a tree gets smashed and it's heading towards you, and you feel it, you know, coming your way. That was a small example of one. You know, I'm going to see if Derek can share one with you, because he's had the most aggressive encounters out of both of us. So I think he had his coke now and he's ready to talk. So I'll hand the mic over to him.
I remember we had a Haunted Timber, a fundraiser for cheerleading girls at our school. We had to do a fundraiser for them. So we did a Haunted Trail, Haunted Timber, charged a couple bucks, whatever we made. We gave it to the cheerleaders, and it was on my wife's land. We had some high school students, had some of my boys, my nephews, my cousins, everybody helping out. And while we were in there, we had everybody hollering. We built a couple of fires, and these guys were spinning the glow stick, glow light around in there. My son and two of his buddies were way in the back there towards the end, and they did hear a guttural growl. One of the boys that was with us on one of our squatching tours, he heard some whoops, some guttural growls out there with us, scared him. And that night he started making them same sounds out there, and that's what got his attention. And we had 3 1 million watt spotlight, three of them back there. And when they heard the guttural growl, they lit it up. And when they did, it, in one motion, it knocked a good-sized tree over with his forearm and pushing with his weight, knocked it over, stepped on it, and then flipped it. That's the best way they described it to me. Wow. And when they flipped, went end over end at him.
And I would imagine that was the end of the night, huh?
No, but the younger ones that helped us, we loaded them up in my Hummer and took them back in town. But the older ones, we had 127 people outside the timber ready to pay. But I never said anything, but we kept that part lit up.
Oh, I gotcha.
It was a fundraiser. Everybody in there has been on the squatching tour with us, so they know. I said, we might even get added help. And that was one thing I stressed to them, that, you know, the light is your best defense on them, because they don't like to be lit up. My son was scared. He said, Dad, you know, that in one motion, he broke the tree, stepped on it, and flipped it end over end, and it flipped three, four times at him and landed by them. And another guttural growl.
Was that pretty much it for the night?
Yeah. After it did that, they lit it up. It ran, would be south, and we were coming into the timber and saw it go by and then jump off hill, about a 10, 15 foot hill there. When it was running, you could hear the boom, 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 boom. You know, the foot, you can hear the foot pounding, or I don't know what you call it. That scared the heck out of some of my crew.
Yeah, I bet. And Tom, what are you hoping to accomplish by going down there? I know you're going to do the TV thing and do some filming, but what is your ultimate goal?
It's to get more recognition for we North American Indians and more participation in regards to research efforts, television shows, you know, anything in the media, you know, instead of giving us, you know, like in the past, I've done, you know, numerous segments on shows, and, you know, you get the same old thing. Oh, yeah, we're coming in, but we can't pay you, but we'd like to film you. Okay, I'll do it. You know, gives recognition for when I was doing my native cultural tours 25 years ago when I first started. So the television crew comes in, they give you some good candy and give you a meal and do this episode with you. And then you see on TV, you know, you get your 2 or 3 minutes little clip, and that's all that showing of the North American Indian cultural component in regards to the hour-long documentary on Sasquatch Bigfoot. So I think, well, actually, I know we've North American Indians need a little bit more respect than that. We need a little bit more time as well. So the only way to do it, and, you know, instead of being, like I say, in Canada, instead of being a whiny Indian about it, I choose to be a positive, forward-thinking Aboriginal entrepreneur, and that's to, you know, do my own TV show and, you know, work with you guys, you know, and thank you very much for getting our efforts and what we're doing out on your podcasts and things. And then looking at it from a socioeconomic and a cultural level for we North American natives, the ones that aren't, you know, certified and working in the big, huge industries like the oil sands or oil fields, logging, or they have a degree and they're, you know, working a career. There's a lot of us that don't have that certification or degrees. And there's a lot of my fellow Aboriginals, First Nations, North American Indians, whatever they want to be referred to, that are living within the confines of their Indian reserves. And, you know, there's not a lot of job act opportunities there. And I know personally from eco-tourism side of things, the tourism industry for me has, you know, been my mainstay when the salmon fisheries and other fisheries collapsed. I chose to go into tourism, and I know how, you know, how good it is for making money. And number one, you know, it's a job that isn't a job. You're getting paid to do something you enjoy, go out in the bush and in the waters and live in your traditional territories. And knowing about Indian reserves being, you know, sort of unique little enclaves of territory that, number one, are private property and no one can just go into them and do what they want, whether it be logging or dropping trees for firewood, to doing an industry, to going looking for Sasquatches or hunting turkeys. You can't do that. It's private property, and you have to go through the tribe connections in order to be invited onto that private property. And this is what I find so unique with what the Webster brothers have, is they have red squatching on their Indian reserve. And I went down there to see it for myself, and I was blown away. You know, we went out pouring rain. We got to know each other. And when Peggy and I arrived there at dark on the reservation, we went to a cabin and met some of his team members and some of his friends. And we had shared, one of them brought a big bowl of chili, and we did the native way. They filled our bellies. We got to know one another. And then 12:15, we all jumped in vehicles and off we went into the Indian reservation under invite to go do some researching. And the vehicle Peggy and I were in got stuck. So that was another half hour, 45 minutes to when they got pulled out. Then we went charging off. And I thought, you know, I was just, you know, expecting to go an hour drive or something deep into the forest. Well, we went up the road about half a mile and stopped. And two vehicles, and we got out, and you know, it's asphalt and it's ditches on either side of the road and timber on either side and a creek running by us, and but it's pitch black. And I was kind of, you know, I wonder what's going on here, I'm thinking. And then they did what I really enjoyed. They started to talk in their language, telling the Sasquatches what they were up to. They started to tell them who they were again, like they do every night, I imagine. And then they got each one of us to come forward and give our respects to the creatures. And after this was done, Peggy's got the listening headphones on, and we're standing there between the two vehicles, and all of a sudden, we all heard something. And it was something walked towards the tree line, and to our, I guess it would be the our left side of the vehicles, the way they were pointing. And this, to me, it sounded, and you got to remember, I only have one ear. Like, hunting clients blew the right ear out decades ago. But to me, it sounded like something walking bipedal. And then after a little bit, like something either squatting or bent down and picked up a wind blowing over tree, maybe 4 or 5 inches thick, and a little bit of its roots are still attached to the soil. It sounded like something picked that thing up, and you can hear roots rip, and then all of a sudden you just hear it crash, 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 like it was end over end tossed in our direction. And, you know, I was waiting, you know, Peggy, she just started trembling and shaking. She's like, oh my God, I can hear it, because she had those earmuffs, listening devices on. And then I'm trying to smell it, and I couldn't really smell anything. And everyone's deathly quiet. And then Barry started talking to it again and asked me to come forward and start talking to it. So I started telling them who I am and using my Kwakwala language to describe some things and translating it to English. And then it just moved off. It just walked away. And you could hear the footfalls, but not, you know, it was definitely going, it was in stealth mode. And Peggy's still talking while she goes, oh, I could hear its footsteps with those earphones on. And, you know, I'm going to next time I'm down there, I'll have one of those earphones on too all the time, because it's just 1 year is just not working. So being a researcher, I got to kick it up a bit, but it was amazing. And like I say, what I'm trying to accomplish is what took place in the first half hour of me going out researching with them. To me, that's unprecedented. You know, I did not expect that. And the way that, to me, the Sasquatches are habituating the Omaha tribe members, and the Omaha tribe members are habituating with respect the Sasquatches, that's a unique situation in Turtle Island. And I know it's taken place in other Indian reservations as well. And this is what the end game is. What's taken place in those Indian reservations across Turtle Island, North America, Canada, and the U.S., it's amazing. We've been doing it since the dawn of our creations. And now some of us, like Res Squatching, Humumu Adventures, and I know there's more out there, and I want to see more out there start up, and I'm willing to help those fellow North American Indians to get these Sasquatch expeditions going. Number one, we need it for revenue generation, socioeconomic prosperity. And if you have a family that's happy making money and a steady pay coming in, you don't have any of the negative social issues. And that's one of the things I want to see, you know, change, because we know that within our communities, some of them, you know, it's pretty tough life. And having a new industry like this, and I know from British Columbia, a lot of people go, Sasquatch tours, that's pretty far-fetched. What are you in, Wonderland or something? And I'm like, no. You look at the Spirit Bear, Central British Columbia, Clem 2, a little Indian village isolated out in their traditional territories that at one time had pretty much everyone unemployed. Negative social issues like you wouldn't believe, and out of respect for the community, I'm not going to talk about it. But all of a sudden, they accepted the fish farming industry, and they accepted and that this white Spirit Bear, the Cromoti Bear, is in their backyard. They started Spirit Bear Lodge. Now there's a community that's importing Indians from other communities to work in their fish plant, in their tourism operation, in their resort. And that's what I see Sasquatch Bigfoot doing for some of our Indian reservations throughout Turtle Island. This is an economic boom, a cultural boom for us, because we have to pass those native stories down to our younger people that are working with us and working and sharing it with the guests that come to take our adventures.
Let me ask you, Tom, I'm trying to get a feel for where you guys, your mindset at as far as what this thing is. And again, there's really no wrong answer. I mean, until one, I always say someone has one in their garage, no one really knows what this thing is. I know a lot of people laugh at the deity thing. A lot of people think it's an ape. A lot of people think it's a person. And there's really no, again, there's no wrong answer on it. But when you guys are speaking to it, in your native language, do you think this thing understands what you're saying?
Oh, yes. Yep, definitely.
And so what do you think that they are, Tom, in your heart? What do you think that these things are?
I think it's a cross between a human and a mountain gorilla. How it gets to be that, I couldn't begin to imagine, other than what I've seen up close with their face and their muscle structure, their eye shapes, their feet, you know, and their, you know, one of them, I could see their toenails. This looks like human toenails. So to me, it's just a cross between a human and a gorilla, because they look like a big, huge mountain gorilla, but standing upright, you know, with that conical head and that stubby little neck, you know, into those big shoulders. But the side profile, but, you know, like on Patty with what they recorded, Mr. Gimlin and Mr. Patterson there, you know, that right away, you can't mistake it. From the knee up to the back of the back, that whole hip and butt is just monstrous. Like from the knee up to that ass, it's just huge. And that's what, you know, to me, when the only thing that compares to that is mountain gorilla. That's where I get that. It's half and half. So I don't know, you know,
until someone finds
a dead one.
Yeah, well, I respect you answering the question. That's why I was kind of curious on if it knew your language, because when you speak to them, you know, like I can speak to my dog, and this is a bad example, but, you know, I can speak to my dog and he knows what I'm saying to him. Is it kind of like that, or is it that they know your language? I guess is my question.
I heard the question. Can I elaborate on that question real quick?
Yeah, of course.
You know, I think even Tom, your little 30-minute, after 30 minutes, we had some kind of activity. But if you remember, you know, we spoke our Omaha language to him, and we got a response, right?
Yep.
And I say that because, you know, that's part of some of our research that we're going to present at our expedition. We find there's a direct correlation. We get, you know, we get a lot of response when we speak in our own tongue. And I don't mean to give any secrets away because, you know, there is no secret. I know a lot of tribes, you know, that's part of their belief. But we find that they do understand. I've taken complete strangers out there and asked him to give us a sign. And we get a tree knock, or we get some kind of activity. We got something thrown at us one time because I asked him to throw something. So, you know, the things we've encountered and experienced, and we truly believe it's that connection and that trust we've gained that we get that kind of response. So, yes, they do understand, you know, native language. You know, they've been around so long that they've heard that. They basically lived amongst our people and you know, used to communicate that way. That's how we see it. That's what we're experiencing as we go out and do this research.
Wes, one of the things we have to look at, too, is in regards to us Native people in North America, we all had shaman. And the path of the shaman is to spend years in the forest alone. And to me, that's where I believe the link of the understanding of our languages comes from. I think for thousands of years, the shaman going out and being by themselves. And there's a lot of stories about them interacting with the Sasquatches. And I believe that's where that link of the understanding the languages comes from. And, you know, the shamans, you know, they're notorious. They're not going to go tell you what took place out there. It's a secret. You know, they're on a spiritual quest. So to me, being out in bush for so long for, you know, through the years, I'm not saying I was talking to Sasquatches because I wasn't, but in times when I knew they were around, you know, like I always say about the Sasquatch, they chatter, 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 chatter. Well, when you got Tom Seawood alone out in the bush and he knows there's something around watching him and, you know, not stalking me, but paralleling me. Well, I'm chatter, chatter, chatter. I'm talking away in English and Kwakwala and French, whatever I know. I'm talking. I'm letting them know. I'm mean you no harm. I'm being cool. So there is that link, and that's a lot of people, things people overlook is that native connection, and that shaman one is something that's a huge data point in regard to them understanding our languages.
No, I understand that, and I'm just trying to understand you guys. That's all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't mean any of the questions to be disrespectful by any means. I'm just trying to understand.
Oh, absolutely not. You're the Super Bowl of the podcast, Wes. I love being on with you. Getting the word out about our people.
As far as your research goes, Barry, is there a couple things interesting that you can tell us about Sasquatch that maybe no one else knows, or are you saving that for the expedition?
Well, Derek's clapping his hands here. Maybe he has something. But, you know, I think the one that the research that stood out to me is, you know, I used to hear they love apples, and I don't doubt that. But to me, it was interesting as I conducted that, we would set apples out. And then one of the guys said, let's put a trail cam back here. You know, I get a lot of requests on our page. Did you use trail cams? Did you use trail cams? And I thought, wow, that'd be cool. So we really thought he loved apples, and we just thought he was some dumb kind of beast, you know, and we knew better, but we thought we was actually going to get him on a trail cam grabbing an apple. We had one where he bit one, but he didn't mess with them after that. So, oh my goodness. As we're speaking to you guys, we got this smell, and I live by a timber.
Sure, anyway. You sure it's not Derek?
Hey, brother, these dogs are going off. We're gonna take you guys on a squat trip right quick, man.
Hey, no kidding. It actually stinks, man. But Let me get back to
That's him.
Anyway, wow. Hey,
What's going on?
I don't know, man. It actually stinks, man. It's actually
just the same smell we smelled it.
Yeah. Anyway, well, I'll answer the question. So we thought, hey, man, we're gonna be, you know, people will know us for having blah blah blah, and sure enough, he didn't bother him. You know, he knew exactly what we were up to. So, you know, it proved to us that they're very intelligent. You know, then the other thing we found is that when we have go out there with good thoughts and we're prayerful and we're respectful, I get some encounters and you know, I think some people out there feel like we're dramatizing this, but I think Tom can attest, and Tom hasn't seen nothing yet. We had, and here I go, I had a Coke, so I'm kind of wired now, so forgive me, I'm ready to talk. But we just had, you know, we noticed that, I've noticed that we have better activity when we can tune in spiritually, clear our minds and our thoughts and, you know, our hearts, that we've had some amazing experiences.
And what's your take on the tree structures? Why did they make the tree structures?
Well, I think Tom came down and he had some nice thoughts about that. And our take is this, is that that's just a territorial marker. You know, and when Tom says that there's clan systems, we totally believe that. We'll see. One time I saw four arches in a row. And if you go on our page, you can see those. So there's just some elaborate. 2 days ago, we went out and we found another area that we know is habituated. And there's another clan that habituates there. We found some structures that you would not believe. Some people obviously have an opinion about those, but you know, they're not there. And we're going out tonight later and we have a strategy, but I can tell you, wow, guys, I'm not trying to hype anything up, but there is a smell that I live in a neighborhood and that smell is strong. That's interesting. And I even forgot what I was talking about, but
no, that's okay.
You know, it's one of those deals where, you know, my wife said, you know, when do you ever think you're going to quit? I said, I don't know. Till I'm dead 6 feet under. I said, I love this stuff. It's fascinating to me.
And Barry, do you think that it should be proven to the world that these things are real?
Well, good question. And I'm glad you asked that, because Tom has a broader perspective, a business perspective about it. And we respect that. I think that's a good thing, you know, native people.
Well, I don't mean with money, because there is people who disappear under very strange circumstances. There is people who are attacked by these things. There is a very much aggression going on in a lot of situations, maybe not in Omaha, but in a lot of places, especially down south, where there, you know, people do disappear under very strange circumstances. And a lot of the natives in those areas will tell you these things will kidnap you, they will kill you, and they will eat you. They're cannibalistic. And that's what I mean. Do you think it's important for the public to know that some sort of proof should come out to show that these things are real, for more or less a safety sake, for, let's say, the hunter going out, and to let him know ahead of time, hey, you can run into this, so he doesn't freak out and start popping off shots, to know that it's a real thing he can run into?
Yeah, you know, that's important. And I'll go back to the reason why we're talking to Tom in the first place. And that is strictly, you know, and I suppose the ears are on, you know, and a lot of people are on. But we actually saw and we've been what we call inspired, you know, to come forth with the truth now, because we saw some TV shows that I won't say any TV show names, but they kind of made a mockery out of it. And to us, you know, we just felt like it was time to come forth with the truth now. And, you know, you're talking about everybody. I hear this all the time. You know, everybody out there wants to be the hero. And you know, there's hardly any proof. And I can tell you that we're ready to unfold some, you know, evidence that will basically blow your mind. And I'm not trying to be the hero. We got curious, and it's taken us this far now. I think, Tom, if you would add in, Tom, did I show you an image? Give me your thoughts on that again, Tom, the image I showed you while you were down here.
That still image you showed me of the face of one, you know, it's, you know, sure, it's a little bit, you know, and the blurry's a little bit blur on it, but you can see undoubtedly that is definitely a Sasquatch. And then, you know, if someone does take the enhancement software to it, you know, you're going to see the wrinkles around the eyes and the mouth and everything. It's just amazing, that photograph. And the one of the lit up one, when you refer to when you're putting the spotlights on that little one, that juvenile, that's pretty cool, because you can definitely see in the picture that the arms are longer than the humans in comparison to the body size and everything. So definitely good images. I know you mentioned to me, oh, I forgot to show you this, I forgot to show you that. So, and to me, I wasn't down there to see all of your images, not this trip. That's for when I get down there next time with Wild Woman Productions, then we'll definitely bring out everything you got and share your guys' story. But, you know, it's, you guys are an amazing place. Like, you know, I know people are probably wondering, you know, what it's like. You know, there's this, what I saw was the one community of Macy, and all around it, you know, these strips of timber and farm fields. And when you brought us to that, when we left the cabins and drove towards Macy, and then we turned around as we were driving that way following you, I told Peggy, as we're looking out the window, I said, Peggy, look at this. Doesn't it look like just prime Sasquatch country? Look at the open fields. Look at the creeks and the culverts under the road that they can use, because these culverts are 10 foot high. And look at these strips of timber they can walk back and forth to the different timber patches on. And you turn around, and all of a sudden we start going to each house, and you're introducing us to those people. And here we are, what I just said was prime Sasquatch area, possibly. They're confirming it with all of their stories. And, you know, that one house where those two guys were inside smoking their cigarettes, looking out the screen windows at us, you know, that was just prime. I wish I had a video camera there on a tripod, because they looked like twins to me. And they're looking out the window telling us about how they had, just in the last week or so, activity around coming from the swamp behind their house. And one banged on the house at night, and he was actually standing on the, I go to him, well, how come you didn't open your door and take a look at him? He's like, no way, I was scared, that thing was big. And, you know, that's what I picked up when I was there in Macy with your tribe members. It's, you know, Friday night, I think that was the first Indian reservation I've ever been to on a Friday night where there's very little activity after dark. I'm so used to, you know, it was raining, mind you, but I'm so used to seeing vehicles driving around, what we call motating in Canada, just basically burning up gas and driving around your community, and people walking or biking with lights on. I didn't see that. But the next day when we talked to these people, your family members included, and the amount of encounters each person had had through the last few years and right to their childhoods, you know, to me, it's just this whole, you have such a unique place with so many creatures and so much interaction between humans and the Sasquatch, and it's unique. And hopefully some other people will go there and experience what I did for one night, but I'm definitely going to go back and experience that, hopefully, when you guys, if you invite me down there, and spend a week or more down there, because that's a beautiful place you got, and definitely want to see one myself down there.
You bet.
So, Tom, will you be coming out with all the evidence in the production that you're doing, that Derek and Barry have done? Will all of their evidence be presented?
I'm just the host and the idea man. That decision is totally with Barry and Derek and their team. And hopefully, you know, they will share everything. And, you know, I think it's going to I know it's going to shake up the Bigfoot Sasquatch community from what I've seen down there. And I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully that's where we go on this path. That's what I'm looking at, is the end result.
Barry, would you guys be sharing all the evidence that you guys have?
Well, we're just, right now, we're just going to play it by ear. We still, You know, the crazy thing, you know, somebody asked me one time, Barry, you know, what do you hope to accomplish out of this? What's your goal? You know, and I guess at this point, you know, we're beyond does he exist? And I guess for me personally, you know, I told my team and they think I'm joking, but I actually want to shake his hand. And no, I'm not smoking anything. I always see that comment come up with the skeptics out there. What's he smoking?
I wanted to ask you, Barry, do you guys have anything else running around on the reservation besides Sasquatch? Have you had any dogman reports or any other strange cryptids that the local natives are seeing?
Well, you know, that is a very good question. Yes, we do. And, We have come across some things, but we just kind of avoid that issue. Now, I'll tell you this, that I got bluffed one time, and I wholeheartedly believe that was the dogman passing through. There was just one evil presence one time that I've never encountered. And the way, you know, we heard his behavior, we researched him, and I truly believe that was the big bad dogman passing through, and we had an encounter with him. So, yeah, we believe in the dogman. I don't know what your question was there, but yeah, there is other things. We have the little people, which we clearly don't mess with. You know, I know Tom calls it woo-woo kind of stuff. Yeah, we've encountered some things. I had a little stick guy run up to us one time. You know, we probably saw a figure of a raptor one time. Now, I know this is, you know, getting into a whole different area, but yes, we have. And it's very interesting.
It is. You know, on Friday's show, I had Caveman Yazzie on. He's from the Southwest. Out there at the Navajo tribe, and he talked about the little people, and he calls them the Anasazi. I guess that's just a term that they use for them. But when you saw it, what did it look like?
Which one? What are you talking about?
The little person.
The little person. You know, we had somebody from North Carolina. He came in to squatch with us, and it was a little foggy, and I could hear like little thumping, like little sticks, like clunk, 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 clunk. And it kept coming closer, and I had my flashlight, so I turned because it kept getting closer from the fog, and I lit him up, and he was a little stick figure, man. He had a little face, and I couldn't believe that. And I know the guy from North Carolina saw, and he kind of half-heartedly looked at it, and he said, "What was that?" I said, "That was a little stick figure." And so that one, just, again, we've had so many encounters with things. We've had our interior lights go bzzz and went off and on. And then you could smell that same smell we just smelled outside my house. So I think the big man, our Situnga, what we call him in our language. I think he was actually outside. You know, that's crazy, but yeah, it's been very interesting. There's been reports here of, what do they call him? Jeepers Creepers. There's been reports of that. My own boss that I work with, this is going to sound crazy, but in broad daylight in the morning, she saw a cow that flew away. And I even investigated that. So yes, yes, yes. There are some unusual things that are happening here.
What do you think the little people are? Do you think it's a branch off from the Sasquatch, or do you think it's something else?
The actual encounter I had, they were little army men dressed in fatigues, but they were ghosts. They were kind of a spirit form. So that's what I saw.
I was curious about the one you saw with the guy from North Carolina. Was that the same thing, what you were just talking
about?
No.
Yeah, this was more physical. This had a little more physical. The one with the North Carolina guy, the the one of our clients that came through. My own personal encounter, or when I was younger, was actual. They actually came up from the ground. That was interesting.
Yeah, and do they look like Sasquatches? Do they look like little miniature Sasquatches?
No, they look like little men. They were actually plotting against us. Me and one of my relatives, we were actually playing hide and go seek at the time in a cornfield. And all of a sudden, we got surrounded probably by at least 75 of them. They just started to like strategize against us. And it was kind of cute in a way. But I was scared shitless, really. But they started to plan and then they started to circle us. So we finally decided, man, we got to bolt. We got to get out of here. So I actually jumped through one. That was weird because I actually thought I was going to trip or actually, you know, knock them over. So, but they were actually in a spirit form.
Okay. Well, it sounds like there's a lot of paranormal stuff going on out there on top of Sasquatch.
There sure is. In fact, we probably deal with that 90, 98% of the time. Once you get past that, then it's Squatch time, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you. Well, Tom, was there anything else you wanted to add?
Yeah, I asked a few questions about the little people down there, and one of his people shared a bunch of stories. So it's no different than up in our territories, you know, and, you know, what we're hearing from all over Turtle Island. You know, we have different creatures that are out there, the big ones, you know, Sasquatch, Bigfoot, what we call it in our native languages. And then, of course, the little people, you know, here in Washington State, I'm down at Peggy's right now. But a couple weeks ago, we talked to some people from a tribe just south of us, and they had all kinds of story about what they call the stick people. And so it's, you know, it's neat. It's very, you know, not unique. I guess it's, you know, very interesting for me to hear the two different stories, which I'm researching more and more, the smaller people. And the paranormal stuff like orbs and all that, I just stay away from it. That's just, I don't really have a really good understanding. And as I've stated before, I'm trying to stay crispy out in the bush. So I'm trying to keep my mind focused on one of two creatures, or if not two of them. So, but it's definitely very interesting what's taking place down there. That's for sure.
Well, I'm excited to see what you guys come up with as far as the final production on it. I know I'll be rooting for you guys. And Barry and Derek, you guys are always welcome to come on the show anytime. Rez Squatch and Research on Facebook. Thank you guys so much for coming on.
You bet. Thank you for having us. We enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I had a great time. And Tom, as always, Hamumu Adventures. Everyone out there, please go check out Hamumu Adventures. Sign up for one of the expeditions. Tom, thank you again for coming on.
Thank you very much. I'll talk to you again.
And that's it for tonight, everyone. Remember, if you've had an encounter, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. Until next time, everyone. Something acquired. The lights on.